Chapter 5. Spiritual Emergency. Understanding and Treatment of Crises of Transformation. Part 1.
One of the most important implications of the research into holotropic states of consciousness is the recognition that many spontaneous episodes, which are currently diagnosed as psychoses and indiscriminately treated by suppressive medication, are actually difficult stages of a radical personality transformation and of spiritual opening. If they are correctly understood and supported, these psycho-spiritual crises can result in emotional and psychosomatic healing, remarkable personality transformation, and consciousness evolution. They also have great heuristic potential. Episodes of this type can be found in the life stories of shamans, yogis, mystics, and saints. Mystical literature around the world describes these crises as important landmarks on the spiritual path and confirms their healing and transformative potential. Mainstream psychiatrists are unable to see the difference between psycho-spiritual crises or even uncomplicated mystical states and serious mental illness because of their narrow conceptual framework. Academic psychiatry has a model of the psyche that is limited to postnatal biography and has a strong biological bias. These are serious obstacles in understanding the nature and content of psychotic states. The term spiritual emergency, which my late wife Christina and I coined for these states, alludes to their positive potential. The Latin word emergere means to emerge, but if a critical situation develops suddenly, it is referred to as an emergency. This name is thus a play on words suggesting a crisis, but at the same time an opportunity to emerge, to rise to a higher level of psychological functioning and spiritual awareness. In this context, we often refer to the Chinese character for crisis, which illustrates the basic idea of spiritual emergency. This ideogram is composed of two pictograms, one of which represents danger, and the other opportunity. Successful completion and integration of such episodes brings a substantial reduction of aggression, an increase of racial, political, and religious tolerance, ecological awareness, and deep changes in the hierarchy of values and existential priorities. Among the benefits that can result from psycho-spiritual crises that are allowed to run their natural course are better psychosomatic health, increased zest for life, a more rewarding life strategy, an expanded worldview, and spirituality that is universal, non-denominational, and all-inclusive. It is not an exaggeration to say that a well-integrated psycho-spiritual crisis can move the individual to a higher level of consciousness evolution. In recent decades, we have seen a rapidly growing interest in spiritual matters, which leads to extensive experimentation with ancient, aboriginal, and modern technologies of the sacred, which are mind-expanding techniques that can mediate spiritual opening. Among them are various shamanic methods, Eastern meditative practices, psychedelic substances, powerful experiential psychotherapies, and laboratory methods developed by experimental psychiatry. According to public polls, the number of Americans who have had spiritual experiences has significantly increased in the second half of the 20th century. It seems that this has been accompanied by a parallel increase of spiritual emergencies. More and more people seem to realize that genuine spirituality based on profound personal experience is a vitally important dimension of life. In view of the escalating global crisis brought about by the materialistic orientation of Western technological civilization, It has become obvious that we are paying a great price for having denied and rejected spirituality. We have banned a force that nourishes, empowers, and gives meaning to human existence from our lives. On the individual level, the toll for the loss of spirituality is an impoverished, alienated, and unfulfilling way of life, as well as an increase in emotional and psychosomatic disorders. On the collective level, the absence of spiritual values leads to strategies of existence that threaten the survival of life on our planet, such as the plundering of non-renewable resources, polluting the natural environment, disturbing the ecological balance, and using violence as a principal means of problem solving. It is therefore in the interest of all of us to find ways of bringing spirituality back into our individual and collective life. This would have to include not only the theoretical recognition of spirituality as a vital aspect of existence, but also encouragement and the social sanctioning of activities that mediate experiential access to spiritual dimensions of reality. An important part of this effort would have to be the development of an appropriate support system for people undergoing crises of spiritual opening, which would make it possible to utilize the positive and transformative potential of these states. In 1980, my wife Christina founded the Spiritual Emergency Network, SEN, an organization that connects individuals undergoing psycho-spiritual crises with professionals who are able and willing to provide assistance based on the new understanding of these states. Filial branches of SEN now exist in many countries of the world. Triggers of spiritual emergency. In many instances, it is possible to identify the situation that precipitated a psycho-spiritual crisis. It can be a primarily physical trigger or stress, such as a disease, accident, or operation. Extreme physical exertion or prolonged lack of sleep may also appear to be the most immediate factor. In women, it can be childbirth, miscarriage, or abortion. We have also seen situations where the onset of the process coincided with an exceptionally powerful sexual experience. In other cases, the psycho-spiritual crisis begins shortly after a traumatic emotional experience. This can be the loss of an important relationship, such as the death of a child or another close relative, divorce, or the end of a love affair. Similarly, a series of failures or loss of a job or property can immediately precede the onset of spiritual emergency. In predisposed individuals, the last straw can be an experience with psychedelic substances or a session of experiential psychotherapy. One of the most important catalysts of spiritual emergency seems to be deep involvement in various forms of meditation and spiritual practice. This should not come as a surprise, since these methods have been specifically designed to facilitate spiritual experiences. We have been repeatedly contacted by people in whom the ongoing spontaneous occurrence of holotropic states was triggered by the practice of Zen or Vipassana Buddhist meditation, Kundalini Yoga, Sufi dhikr, monastic contemplation, or Christian prayer. The possibility of this happening increases if such spiritual practice involves fasting, sleep deprivation, and extended periods of meditation. The wide range of triggers for spiritual emergency clearly suggests that the individual's readiness for inner transformation plays a far more important role than the external stimuli. When we look for a common denominator or final common pathway of the situations described above, we find that they all involve a radical shift in the balance between the unconscious and conscious processes. weakening of psychological defenses, or conversely, increase of the energetic charge of the unconscious dynamics, makes it possible for the unconscious and superconscious material to emerge into consciousness. It is well known that psychological defenses can be weakened by a variety of biological stresses, such as physical trauma, exhaustion, sleep deprivation, or intoxication. Psychological traumas can mobilize the unconscious, particularly when they involve elements that are reminiscent of earlier traumas and are part of a significant coax system. The strong potential of delivery as a trigger of psychospiritual crisis seems to reflect the fact that childbirth combines biological weakening with specific reactivation of the perinatal memories. Failures and disappointments in the professional and personal life can undermine and thwart the outward-oriented motivations and ambitions of the individual. This makes it more difficult to use external activities as an escape from emotional problems, and leads to psychological withdrawal and turning the attention to the inner world. As a result, unconscious content can emerge into consciousness and interfere with the individual's everyday experience, or even completely override it. There seems to be an inverse relationship between outward orientation and pursuit of external material goals, and attention given to inner processes and time spent in introspection. Crises in various sectors of one's life that undermine or destroy positive perspective, the death of close relatives and friends, the breaking up of a marriage or an important relationship, the loss of property or a job, and a series of failures tend to turn the attention inward and activate the unconscious. The similarity of the current traumas with previous ones, often an entire series of them, then add the emotional power of the corresponding coexes to the impact of the recent events. The dismal general situation in the world and loss of perspective, e.g., death of the American dream, can also have a similar effect. Diagnosis of spiritual emergency. When we emphasize the need to recognize the existence of spiritual emergencies, this does not mean an indiscriminate rejection of the theories and practices of mainstream psychiatry. Not all states that are currently diagnosed as psychotic are crises of psychospiritual transformation or have a healing potential. Episodes of non-ordinary states of consciousness cover a very broad spectrum, from purely spiritual experiences to conditions that are clearly biological in nature and require medical treatment. While mainstream psychiatrists generally tend to pathologize mystical states, there also exists the opposite problem of romanticizing and glorifying psychotic states, or even worse, overlooking a serious medical problem. Many mental health professionals who encounter the concept of spiritual emergency want to know the exact criteria by which one can make the differential diagnosis between spiritual emergency and psychosis. Unfortunately, it is impossible in principle to make such a differentiation according to the standards used in somatic medicine. Unlike diseases treated by somatic medicine, psychotic states that are not clearly organic in nature, functional psychoses, are not medically defined. It is actually highly questionable whether they should be called diseases at all. Functional psychoses are certainly not diseases in the same sense as diabetes, typhoid fever, or pernicious anemia. They do not yield any specific clinical or laboratory findings that would support the diagnosis and justify the assumption that they are of biological origin. The diagnosis of these states is based entirely on the observation of unusual experiences and behaviors for which contemporary psychiatry, with its painfully superficial model of the human psyche, lacks adequate explanation. Anybody acquainted with the labeling practices in medicine knows that the meaningless attributes endogenous or functional used for these conditions are tantamount to admission of this ignorance. At present, there is no reason to refer to these conditions as mental diseases and to assume that the experiences involved are products of a pathological process in the brain that have yet to be discovered. If we give it some thought, we realize it is highly unlikely that a pathological process afflicting the brain could in and of itself generate the incredibly rich experiential spectrum of the states currently diagnosed as psychotic. How could abnormal processes in the brain possibly generate such experiences as culturally specific sequences of psycho-spiritual death and rebirth, convincing identification with Jesus on the cross, or with the dancing Shiva, an episode involving death on the barricades in Paris during the French Revolution, or complex scenes of alien abduction? Chemical changes can catalyze such experiences, but cannot in and of themselves create the intricate imagery and the rich philosophical and spiritual insights that spiritual emergencies often provide. And they certainly could not mediate access to accurate new information about various aspects of the universe. This becomes obvious when we look at the effects of psychoactive substances with known chemical structures and the doses in which they are used. The administration of LSD and other psychedelics and entheogens can account for the emergence of deep unconscious material into consciousness, but it cannot explain its nature and contents. To understand the phenomenology of psychedelic experiences requires a much more sophisticated approach than a simple reference to abnormal biochemical or biological processes in the body. This requires a comprehensive approach that has to include transpersonal psychology, parapsychology, mythology, philosophy, and comparative religion. The same is true in regard to psycho-spiritual crises. The experiences that manifest in spiritual emergencies are clearly not artificial products of aberrant pathophysiological processes in the brain, but belong to the psyche. Naturally, to be able to see it this way, we have to transcend the narrow understanding of the psyche that is offered by mainstream psychiatry and use a vastly expanded conceptual framework. Examples of such enlarged models of the psyche are the cartography described earlier in this book, Roberto Assagioli's Psychosynthesis, Ken Wilber's Spectrum Psychology, and C.G. Jung's concept of the psyche as anima mundi, or the world soul, which includes the historical and archetypal collective unconscious. Such a large and comprehensive understanding of the psyche is also characteristic of the great Eastern philosophies and the mystical traditions of the world. Since functional psychoses are not defined medically but psychologically, it is impossible to provide a rigorous differential diagnosis between spiritual emergency and psychosis the same way it is done in medical practice, as with different forms of encephalitis, brain tumors, or dementias. Considering this fact, is it possible to make any diagnostic conclusions at all? How can we approach this problem, and what can we offer in lieu of a clear and unambiguous differential diagnosis between spiritual emergency and psychiatric disease? A viable alternative is to define the criteria that would make it possible to determine which individual experiencing an intense spontaneous holotropic state of consciousness is likely to be a good candidate for a therapeutic strategy that validates and supports the process. We can also attempt to determine under what circumstances using an alternative approach would not be appropriate, and when the current practice of routine psychopharmacological suppression of symptoms would be preferable. A necessary prerequisite for such an evaluation is a good medical examination that eliminates the possibility of conditions which are organic in nature and require biological treatment. Once this is accomplished, the next important guideline is the phenomenology of the non-ordinary state of consciousness in question. Spiritual emergencies involve a combination of biographical, perinatal, and transpersonal experiences, which were described earlier. Experiences of this kind can be elicited in a group of randomly selected normal people, not only by psychedelic substances, but also by such simple means as meditation, shamanic drumming, faster breathing, evocative music, bodywork, and a variety of other non-drug techniques. Those of us who work with holotropic breathwork see such experiences daily in our workshops and seminars and have the opportunity to appreciate their healing and transformative potential. In view of this, it is difficult to attribute similar experiences to some exotic and yet unknown pathology when they occur spontaneously in the middle of everyday life. It makes eminent sense to approach these experiences in the same way that they are approached in holotropic sessions. To encourage people to surrender to the process and to support the emergence and full expression of the unconscious material that becomes available. Another important prognostic indicator is the person's attitude to the process and his or her experiential style. It is generally very encouraging when people who have holotropic experiences recognize that what is happening to them is an inner process, are open to experiential work, and interested to try it. Transpersonal strategies are not appropriate for individuals who lack this elementary insight, predominantly use the mechanism of projection, or suffer from persecutory delusions. The capacity to form a good working relationship with an adequate amount of trust is an absolutely essential prerequisite for psychotherapeutic work with people in crisis. It is also very important to pay attention to the way clients talk about their experiences. The communication style often distinguishes, in and of itself, promising candidates from inappropriate or questionable ones. It is a very good prognostic indicator when the person describes the experiences in a coherent and articulate way, however extraordinary and strange their content might be. In a sense, this would be similar to hearing an account of a person who has just had a high-dose psychedelic session and intelligently describes what might appear to be strange and extravagant experiences to an uninformed person. The following two cases illustrate the attitude, both toward the inner process and in the communication style, which would make a client either a good or problematic candidate for treatment of a spiritual emergency. The first client comes to a psychiatrist with these complaints. "Since the delivery of my daughter about 2 weeks ago, I've been having strange experiences. Powerful streams of energy that feel like electric discharges are running up and down my spine and making my body shake in a way that is difficult to control. I experience waves of strong emotions, anxiety, sadness, anger, or joy that come unexpectedly and for no reason. Sometimes I see lights that take the shape of deities or demons. I don't believe in reincarnation, but sometimes I see flashes of what seem to be memories from other times and countries that I seem to recognize as if I had lived there before. What is happening to me? Am I going crazy?" This person is clearly bewildered and confused by strange experiences, but sees the situation as an internal process and is willing to accept advice and help. This would qualify the situation as a spiritual emergency and promise a good therapeutic outcome. The second client presents a different picture. He's not describing his symptoms and asking for psychiatric advice. He tells instead a story about his enemies. My neighbor is out to get me. He's trying to destroy me. He pumps toxic gases into my bedroom and gets into my house at night through a tunnel in the cellar and poisons the food in my refrigerator. I have no privacy in my own home. He's placed bugging devices and hidden micro cameras everywhere. All the information goes to the mafia. My neighbor is on their payroll. They're paying him large amounts of money to get rid of me because I have such high moral principles that it is getting in the way of their plans. And the money for this whole thing is coming from the Middle East, mostly petrodollars. This client clearly lacks the fundamental insight that the situation has anything to do with his own psyche. It is unlikely that he would agree to a joint journey of self-exploration and healing and form a good therapeutic relationship. Varieties of spiritual emergency. The issue of classifying psycho-spiritual crises is closely related to the problem of their differential diagnosis. Is it possible to distinguish and define certain types or categories among them in the way that the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, DSM-5 revised, used by traditional psychiatrists, does? Before we address this question, it is necessary to emphasize that the attempts to classify psychiatric disorders, with the exception of those that are clearly organic in nature, have been painfully unsuccessful. There is no general agreement about diagnostic categories among American psychiatrists or psychiatric societies in other countries. Although the DSM has been revised and changed a number of times, usually after heated debates and with much dissent, clinicians keep complaining that they have difficulties matching the symptoms of their clients with the official diagnostic categories. It has become clear that the attempts to create a satisfactory and useful DSM have failed. The American National Institute of Mental Health, NIMH, currently rejects any research projects using this instrument. Spiritual emergencies present a similar problem. If anything, assigning people in psychospiritual crises to well-defined diagnostic pigeonholes is particularly problematic because of the fact that their phenomenology is unusually rich and can draw on all levels of the psyche. The symptoms of psychospiritual crises represent a manifestation and exteriorization of the deep dynamics of the psyche. The individual human psyche is a multidimensional and multi-leveled system with no internal partitions and boundaries. Memories from postnatal life and contents of the Freudian individual unconscious form a seamless continuum with perinatal and transpersonal experiences. We cannot therefore expect to find clearly defined and demarcated types of spiritual emergency. However, our work with individuals in psychospiritual crises, exchanges with colleagues doing similar work, and a study of literature have convinced us that it is possible and useful to outline certain major forms of psychospiritual crises, which have sufficiently characteristic features to be differentiated from each other. Naturally, their boundaries are not clear, and in practice, we will see some significant overlaps. The following list includes the most important varieties of psychospiritual crises that we have observed. 1. Shamanic initiatory crisis. 2. Awakening of Kundalini. 3. Episodes of unitive consciousness, Maslow's peak experiences. 4. Psychological renewal through return to the center, John Weir Perry. 5. Crisis of psychic opening. 6. Past life experiences. 7. communication with spirit guides, and channeling. 8. Near-death experiences, NDEs. 9. Close encounters with UFOs and alien abduction experiences. 10. Possession states. 11. Alcoholism and drug addiction. Shamanic initiatory crisis. The career of many shamans, witch doctors or medicine men and women in different cultures, begins with a dramatic, involuntary visionary state that anthropologists call shamanic illness. During such episodes, future shamans usually withdraw psychologically or even physically from their everyday environment and have powerful holotropic experiences. They typically undergo a visionary journey into the underworld, the realm of the dead, where they are attacked by demons and exposed to horrendous tortures and ordeals. This painful initiation culminates in experiences of death and dismemberment, followed by rebirth and ascent to celestial regions. This might involve transformation into a bird, such as an eagle, falcon, thunderbird, or condor, and a flight to the realm of the cosmic sun. The novice shaman can also have the experience of being carried by these birds to the solar realm. In some cultures, the motif of magic flight is replaced by reaching the celestial region by climbing the world tree, a rainbow, a pole with many notches, or a ladder made of bows and arrows. In the course of these arduous visionary journeys, novice shamans develop deep connections with the force of nature and with animals, both in their natural form and their archetypal versions, animal spirits or power animals. When these visionary journeys are successfully completed, they can be profoundly healing. In the process, novice shamans often free themselves from emotional, psychosomatic, and sometimes even physical diseases. For this reason, anthropologists refer to shamans as wounded healers. In many instances, the involuntary initiates attain deep insights into the energetic and metaphysical causes of diseases and learn how to heal themselves as well as others. Following the successful completion of the initiatory crisis, the individual becomes a shaman and returns to his or her people as a fully functioning and honored member of the community. He or she assumes the combined role of a healer, priest, and visionary artist. In our workshops and professional training, modern Americans, Europeans, Australians, and Asians have often experienced episodes that bore a close resemblance to shamanic crises during their holotropic breathwork sessions. Besides the elements of physical and emotional torture, death, and rebirth, such states involved experiences of connection with animals, plants, and elemental forces of nature. The individuals experiencing such crises also often showed spontaneous tendencies to invent chants and rituals that were similar to those created by shamans of various cultures. On occasion, mental health professionals with this experience have been able to use the lessons from their journeys and create modern versions of shamanic procedures. The attitude of native cultures toward shamanic crises has often been explained by the lack of elementary psychiatric knowledge and the resulting tendency to attribute every experience and behavior that these people do not understand to supernatural forces. However, nothing could be further from the truth. Cultures that recognize shamans and show them great respect have no difficulty in differentiating them from individuals who are crazy or sick. To be considered a shaman, the individual has to successfully complete the transformational journey and ground and integrate the episodes of challenging holotropic states of consciousness. he or she has to be able to function at least as well as other members of the tribe. The way shamanic crises are approached and treated in these societies is an extremely useful and illustrative model of dealing with psycho-spiritual crises in general. The awakening of Kundalini. The manifestations of this form of psycho-spiritual crisis resemble the descriptions of the awakening of Kundalini, or the serpent power, found in ancient Indian literature. According to the yogis, Kundalini is the generative cosmic energy, feminine in nature, which is responsible for the creation of the cosmos. In its latent form, it resides at the base of the human spine, in the subtle or energetic body, which is a field that permeates as well as surrounds the physical body. This latent energy can become activated by meditation, by the intervention of an accomplished spiritual teacher, guru, by specific exercises, childbirth, or for unknown reasons. The activated Kundalini, called Shakti, rises through the nadis, energy channels or conduits in the subtle body. As it ascends, it clears old traumatic imprints and opens the centers of psychic energy, called chakras. These are located at the crossings of the three main nadis, Sushumna, Ida, and Pingala. This process, although highly valued and considered benevolent in the yogic tradition, is not without dangers and requires expert guidance by a guru whose Kundalini is fully awakened and stabilized. The most dramatic sign of Kundalini awakening are physical and psychological manifestations called kriyas. The kriyas are intense sensations of energy and heat streaming up the spine, which are associated with violent shaking, spasms, and twisting movements. Powerful waves of seemingly unmotivated emotions, such as anxiety, anger, sadness, or joy and ecstatic rapture, can surface and temporarily dominate the psyche. This can be accompanied by visions of brilliant light or various archetypal beings and a variety of internally perceived sounds. Many people involved in this process also have powerful experiences with what seem to be memories from past lives. Involuntary and often uncontrollable behaviors complete the picture. Speaking in tongues, chanting unknown songs or sacred invocations, mantras. Assuming yogic postures, asanas, and gestures, mudras, and making a variety of animal sounds and movements. C.G. Jung and his colleagues dedicated a series of special seminars to this phenomenon. Jung's perspective on Kundalini proved to be probably the most remarkable error of his entire career. He concluded that the awakening of Kundalini was an exclusively Eastern phenomenon and predicted that, as a result of depth psychology, it would take at least 1,000 years before this energy would be set into motion in the West. In the last several decades, however, unmistakable signs of Kundalini awakening have been observed in thousands of Westerners. The credit for drawing attention to this phenomenon belongs to California psychiatrist and ophthalmologist Lee Sanella, who single-handedly studied hundreds of these cases and summarized his findings in his book, The Kundalini Experience, Psychosis or Transcendence. Episodes of Unitive Consciousness, Peak Experiences. American psychologist Abraham Maslow studied hundreds of people who had had unitive mystical experiences and coined the term peak experiences for them. He expressed sharp criticism of Western psychiatry's tendency to confuse such mystical states with mental diseases, According to him, they should be considered supernormal rather than abnormal phenomena. If they are not interfered with and are allowed to run their natural course, these states typically lead to better functioning in the world and to self-actualization or self-realization. The capacity to express one's creative potential more fully and to live a more rewarding and satisfying life. Psychiatrist and consciousness researcher Walter Pinkey developed a list of basic characteristics of a typical peak experience based on the work of Abraham Maslow and W.T. Stace. He used the following criteria to describe this state of mind. 1. Unity, inner and outer. 2. Strong positive emotion. 3. Transcendence of time and space. 4. Sense of sacredness, numinosity. 5. Paradoxical nature. 6. Objectivity and reality of the insights. 7. Ineffability. And 8. Positive after effects. As this list indicates, when we have a peak experience, we have a sense of overcoming the usual fragmentation of the mind and body, and feel that we have reached a state of unity and wholeness. We also transcend the ordinary distinction between subject and object, and experience ecstatic union with humanity, nature, the cosmos, and God. This is associated with intense feelings of joy, bliss, serenity, and inner peace. In a mystical experience of this type, we have a sense of leaving ordinary reality, where space has three dimensions and time is linear. We enter a metaphysical transcendent realm, where these categories no longer apply. In this state, infinity and eternity become experiential realities. The numinous quality of this state has nothing to do with previous religious beliefs. It reflects a direct apprehension of the divine nature of reality. Descriptions of peak experiences are usually full of paradoxes. The experience can be described as contentless, yet all-containing. It has no specific content, but seems to contain everything in a potential form. We can have a sense of being simultaneously everything and nothing. While our personal identity and the limited ego have disappeared, we feel that we have expanded to such an extent that our being encompasses the entire universe. Similarly, it is possible to perceive all forms as empty, or emptiness as being pregnant with all forms. We can even reach a state in which we see that the world exists and does not exist at the same time. The peak experience can convey what seems to be ultimate wisdom and knowledge in matters of cosmic relevance, which the Upanishads describe as knowing that, the knowledge of which gives the knowledge of everything. This revelation does not involve knowledge of various aspects of the world as studied by materialistic science, but the deepest nature of reality, as well as our own nature. In Buddhism, a similar type of knowledge is called transcendental wisdom, prajnaparamita. It dispels our ignorance about the most fundamental aspects of existence, avidya. What we have learned during this experience is ineffable. It cannot be described by words. The vocabulary of our language, which is designed to communicate about objects and events in the material world, seems to be inadequate for this purpose. Yet the experience can profoundly influence our system of values and strategy of existence. People familiar with Eastern spiritual philosophies often resort to specific terminology developed in countries with many centuries of experience in the exploration of holotropic states of consciousness. India, Tibet, China, and Japan. Due to the generally benign nature, great healing, and transformative potential of the peak experiences, this is a category of spiritual emergency that should be least problematic. Peak experiences are by their nature transient and self-limited. There's absolutely no reason why they should be seen and treated as manifestations of mental disease. And yet, due to the ignorance of our culture and misconceptions of the psychiatric profession concerning spiritual matters, many people who experience them receive pathological labels, end up hospitalized, and their process is truncated by suppressive medication. Psychological renewal through return to the center. Another important type of transpersonal crisis was described by California psychiatrist and Jungian analyst John Weir Perry, who called it the renewal process. Due to its depth and intensity, this is the type of psycho-spiritual crisis that is most likely diagnosed as a serious mental disease. The experiences of people involved in the renewal process are so strange, extravagant, and far from everyday reality that it seems obvious that some serious pathological process must be affecting the functioning of their brains. But as we will see, it is this type of psycho-spiritual crisis that provides the most convincing evidence against the proposition that holotropic states are products of a pathological process afflicting the brain. Individuals involved in this kind of crisis experience their psyche as a colossal battlefield where a cosmic fight is being played out between the forces of good and evil, or forces of light and darkness. They are preoccupied with the theme of death, ritual killing, sacrifice, martyrdom, and afterlife. The problem of opposites fascinates them, particularly issues related to the difference between sexes. They experience themselves as the center of fantastic events that have cosmic relevance and are important for the future of the world. Their visionary states tend to take them farther and farther back, through their own history and the history of humanity, all the way to the creation of the world and the original ideal state of paradise. In this process, they seem to strive for perfection, trying to correct things that went wrong in the past. After a period of turmoil and confusion, the experiences become more and more pleasant and start moving toward a resolution. The process often culminates in the experience of hieros gamos, or sacred marriage, in which the individual is elevated to an illustrious or even divine status and experiences union with an equally distinguished partner. This indicates that the masculine and feminine aspects of the personality are reaching a new balance. The sacred union can be experienced either with an imaginary archetypal figure or is projected onto an idealized person from one's life, who then appears to be a karmic partner or a soulmate. At this time, one can also have experiences portraying what Jungian psychology interprets as symbols representing the self, the transpersonal center that reflects our deepest and true nature. It is related to, but not totally identical with, the Hindu concept of Atman Brahman, the divine within. In visionary states, it can appear in the form of a source of light of supernatural beauty, radiant spheres, precious stones, exquisite jewels, pearls, and other similar symbolic representations. Examples of this development, from painful and challenging experiences to the discovery of one's divinity, can be found in John Perry's books, and in The Stormy Search for the Self, our book on spiritual emergencies. At this stage in the process, these glorious experiences are interpreted as a personal apotheosis, a ritual celebration that raises one's experience of oneself to a highly exalted human status, or to a state above the human condition altogether. A great leader, a world savior, or even the Lord of the universe. This is often associated with a profound sense of spiritual rebirth that replaces the earlier preoccupation with death. As the process approaches completion and integration, it usually brings visions of an ideal future, a new world governed by love and justice, where all ills and evils have been overcome. As the intensity of the process subsides, the person realizes that the entire drama was an inner psychological transformation and did not involve external reality. According to John Perry, the renewal process moves the individual in the direction of what Jung called individuation, a full realization and expression of one's deep potential. One aspect of Perry's research deserves special notice, since it produced what is probably the most convincing evidence against a simplistic biological understanding of psychoses. Perry was able to show that the experiences involved in the renewal process exactly match the main themes of royal dramas that were enacted in many ancient cultures on New Year's Day. In all of these cultures, such ritual dramas celebrating the advent of the new year were performed during what Perry called the archaic era of incarnated myth. This was the period in the history of these cultures when the rulers were considered to be incarnated gods and not ordinary human beings. Examples of such god kings were the Egyptian pharaohs, the Peruvian Incas, the Hebrew and Hittite kings, and the Chinese and Japanese emperors. The positive potential of the renewal process and its deep connection with archetypal symbolism, evolution of consciousness, and specific periods of human history represents a very compelling argument against the theory that these experiences are chaotic, pathological products of diseased brains.